You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's fucked.
Yeah, it is.
The Wire.
Ko te Wire, tēnā maronga BFM, and that was Ben speaking to Marianne McDonald from SAFE. But now, what's up, Justin?
Yes, an international story. We are going to Malaysia. So the country's former Deputy Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim has returned to Parliament following a by-election in Port Dickson 2 weeks ago. He wasn't in Malaysian politics since 2015 because he was jailed again for 5 years after failing his appeal on sodomy, which he was accused of since 1998. And while back in May, a general election in Malaysia witnessed the first regime change in Malaysia's history, well, since Malaysia's independence in 1957, which the centre-left opposition, Pakatan Harapan, which in English means the Alliance of Hope, won a single majority in parliament and ended the 61-year rule of the centre-right party, Barisan Nasional, or in English, is the National Front.
Right.
Yeah. The election also returned Mahathir Mohamad to the prime ministership, and things here started to get a little bit complicated, but I'll talk about Mahathir a little bit more later. But first, I'm just going to talk about why Barisan Nasional is able to be in power for 61 years. They are the single ruling party since Malaysia went independent in 1957,
okay. And
it has been enforced in May 1969, which a race riot happened in Kuala Lumpur.
Mm.
So what happens behind this race riot, you have to first understand the population of Malaysia.
Okay.
It's mostly dominated by Malays, while like 70% of the Malaysian population is Malays, while Chinese, Indians and the others make up the rest.
Okay.
And as in other countries in Southeast Asia, the Chinese are much better financially. And since the 15th century, they are considered one of the wealthiest ethnic groups in Malaysia and have been more prosperous than other ethnic communities in Malaysia. And what happens in May 1969 is they have a general election, and the ruling Alliance Party, which is the predecessor of the National Front, has won less than half of the popular vote.
Okay.
And yeah, and naturally, but on the other hand, two new Chinese-dominated parties have performed better than expected. So naturally, the Chinese are very happy, and days after the election, they went onto the streets of Kuala Lumpur to celebrate. But the parades are alleged to be highly provocative, with non-Malays taunting Malays, and
right. That's
not going to end well. And just 2 days after these parades, on the 13th, Malays in Kuala Lumpur started to burn cars and shops and loot Chinese-dominated areas in Kuala Lumpur, arming themselves with knives and daggers. It's only started at 6 p.m. that day, and in just 45 minutes, the violence has spread throughout the city and killed 200 people that night.
Far out.
Yeah, and including 140 Chinese. And just after the riots, because the Alliance is still in power, they pushed for race-based affirmative policies, such as the Malaysian New Economic Policy, and gave Malays privileges to, I would think the correct term for this is appease them.
Okay.
Yeah, and since then, Chinese have been supporting the opposition in the government. Now, after this, I'm going to talk about Mahathir and Anwar and basically their frenemies since the 1980s. I'll start with Mahathir. If we want to put Mahathir in a New Zealand perspective, think of him as Winston Peters. Yes.
So he's the 93-year-old.
Yeah.
Now. Right.
He's 93 years old and he has been in Malaysian politics since, get this, 1964.
Yeah.
Yeah. And another thing that Mahathir is like Winston Peters is he had been sacked from his party, the Barisan Nasional, which is in 1969 after the race riots in Kuala Lumpur because he blamed the Prime Minister then, Abdul Rahman, for causing the riots.
Right.
But in some place, Mahathir is not like Winston Peters because he had been the Prime Minister between 1981 and 2003. Yes.
For that long?
Yeah.
He was Prime Minister for that whole time?
Yeah, 1981 to 2003.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And then I'm going to talk about Anwar Ibrahim.
Okay.
Anwar's rise to Malaysian politics comes out as a complete surprise in the 1980s. During his youngest days in university, he was actually famous for not being part of a political party, but an Islamic youth movement called Angkatan Belia Islam Malaysia, which in English is Muslim Youth Movement of Malaysia, he was part of the founding members and became its second president. And because the movement itself was Islamic focused, a lot of people thought he would be associated with the Malaysian Islamic Party, which, again, I put it into a New Zealand perspective, think of as the Maori Party because it's a split from Barisan Nasional. Yeah. But in 1982, Anwar surprised everyone by joining the National Front and ran for parliament on their behalf. And his rise didn't just stop there in 1982. And just 4 years from 1983, he became the Minister of Culture, Youth and Sports, then to the Minister of Agriculture, and then to the Minister of Education in 1986. And 5 years later, in 1991, he was appointed the Finance Minister by Mahathir, and then he became the Deputy Prime Minister in 1993. So it's just 11 In just 11 years, he basically rose from being nobody to the deputy prime minister.
Right.
Yeah. And he was just 46 at that time. And he was, because of his rise, he was seen as the future of not only Malaysia, but for the whole of Asia as well. And it's no surprise that he was seen to be the heir of the prime ministership when Mahathir retires later, because he was like a tender age of 70 something at that time. Yes. But the relations started to break down in 1997 during the Asian financial crisis, it's very involved.
Big story in itself.
Big story. I'm not going to talk about that right now. And Anwar and Mahathir disagreed on the plan for economic recovery from Malaysia.
Right.
Yeah, while Mahathir wanted an expansionary approach with loose monetary policies and lower interest rates, which is basically a longer term for I want to spend more money, Anwar favored a tight monetary policy and such something austerity measures, which is we won't be spending any money.
Right.
And this disagreement eventually boiled over in January 1998, when Mahathir formed an economic council to tackle the crisis without Anwar, who is the finance minister in it. And Anwar, naturally, who wasn't satisfied about the decision, decided to challenge for the prime ministership in June that year. But that was the last straw for Mahathir, and he sacked Anwar in September. Yeah. But the sacking didn't go down very well for Malaysia, which tens of thousands of people protested in Kuala Lumpur on the 20th of September, demanding Mahathir's resignation. And just hours after the protest, Anwar was arrested for allegations of being a homosexual.
Is that still illegal there?
It's still a taboo, but if it's illegal, I'm not quite sure. But considering Malaysia is predominant, 60% of Malaysia's population are Muslims, that's still a taboo.
Okay.
Even though it's legalized.
Okay.
Yeah. But this, yeah. And just our, yeah. And Anwar, after he was arrested, he appeared in court 9 days later with a black eye, which a local police chief admitted he did that to him.
That's awful.
Yeah. And he was eventually charged with corruption and sodomy, and he was sentenced to 9 years in prison in 1999. And that's not the end for him. and he was released in 2004 after his 9-year sentence was reduced to 4 years for good behavior. After he was released, Anwar returned to parliament and became the opposition leader, but the sodomy allegations lingered in 2008 after the general election, which Anwar was credited with galvanizing the opposition to its best electoral showing by quadrupling the opposition seats in parliament. A 23-year-old aide accused him of sodomizing him again. Yeah, but Anwar was found not guilty 4 years after these initial allegations, after the High Court ruled the DNA evidence had been tampered with. But that's still not the end. Various appeals from the prosecution and the defense came back and forth, with the highest court upheld the conviction against Anwar and sentenced him to 5 years in prison in 2015.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah, that's...
And now?
Oh, he's back out, but I'm going to get to that later.
Right.
But yeah, what about Mahathir? He retired in 2003 and passed on the prime ministership to another protege of his, Abdullah Badawi. And after Badawi retired, he then passed on the prime minister to Najib Razak, who is another of Mahathir's students. And Najib Razak is the reason why Mahathir and Anwar got together and became friends again, because of the scandal at One Malaysia Development Berhad, 1MDB. So 1MDB is a Malaysian strategic development company owned by Kuala Lumpur. It was established to drive strategic initiatives for long-term economic development for Malaysia by forging global partnerships and promoting foreign direct investment. And since 2015, that's under the rule of Najib, there are suspicious money transactions and evidences pointing to money laundering activities. And Najib was accused of channeling over 2.6 billion ringgit, that's $700 million, from One Malaysia to his personal bank accounts.
Far out.
Yeah. And despite his attorney general saying nothing is wrong, many Malaysians still don't believe him and calling for him to resign. And that included Mahathir, who said, and I quote, "A prime minister who came from pirates is now leading Malaysia." Yes. And in January this year, Mahathir announced he would be the opposition alliance's prime ministerial candidate for the election in May, while Anwar's wife would be his deputy. And he promised to withdraw in two years for Anwar to take over. After his victory in May, Mahathir immediately sought a pardon for Anwar, and he has been released in prison just days after the election. Anwar was supposed to be in prison since 2020, and he reopened the investigation on Najib, who was arrested in July. Najib's 6 properties were raided by the police, and they seized 284 boxes of valuables worth more than $270 million.
Far out.
Yeah, and the story of Mahathir and Anwar just ends here for now. But looking at the future, Will Mahathir fulfill his promise to Anwar, and will the current government will remain in power in the next general election?
Yeah.
Will be still in the air, because Mahathir himself is a Malay nationalist through and through, and it is quite odd that he is leading an alliance that is supported by Chinese and Indians. And will Mahathir eventually give promote policies that are appealing to Chinese, or even fulfill his primary promise to giving, and while the prime ministership is still right. up in the air. So we'll have to see more.
Political ambiguity.
Yes, and like if you think Australia and the UK have, and you have already enough of the Australian and the UK's leadership crisis, yeah, just have a look in Malaysia yeah. or somewhere in Asia during the Cold War, and right. that's more far out.
All good examples of political unrest. Going back to Ben's story on rodeo, we've had a couple of texts, and one person says rodeos have no place in modern society, much like bullfighting. Don't understand why it hasn't already been banned. But another person says, if you don't like rodeos, don't venture south of the Bombays. But in our next story.
This is the Green Desk on 95 BFM.
This week on the Green Desk, Jack talks with Mikhail Prokopenko, a professor of computer science at the University of Sydney, about creating cities with multiple city centres to cut down commute times. Jack spoke with Prokopenko about how his computer models may help us understand the unintended consequences of transforming our cities, and even details a blueprint on how we can build a better city here in Auckland.
We basically try to model a transition or transformation from our current state, which is more monocentric, as people say, when you have one well densely populated CBD and then urban sprawl radiating from this CBD, to something else which many people have thought could be a future model, which is called polycentric, with multiple sub-centers. And in fact, Greater Sydney Commission just a year ago put forward the plan for a tripartite metropolitan area. So we thought basically, okay, I mean, that's a good plan, and that will solve a lot of issues that many Sydneysiders face every day, like long commute time and in general sound.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.